Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram weekend edition for Saturday, June 4th, 2022. Oil gas taxes reach state high. By Mel McEwen. In the latest sign, Texas oil and gas has not just recovered from the COVID pandemic, but is surpassing pre-pandemic levels in the Comptroller's report on oil and natural gas production taxes. Comptroller Glenn Heger reported that $666 million in oil production taxes was paid in April, the highest monthly amount in Texas history and 99% higher than April of 2021. That was followed closely by $595 million in May, which was 64% above May 2021 collections. Natural gas production taxes were $339 million in April, up 46%, while May's revenues of $413 million was the highest amount in history and a whopping 216% higher than the previous May. Once again, Permian Basin producers are contributing record taxes to the state of Texas, commented Ben Shepard. It is a testament to the hardworking men and women in the Permian Basin and will benefit every man, woman, and child in Texas. Kevin Lyons, spokesman of the Comptroller's Office, said that the Comptroller's Office forecasts collecting $4.9 billion for the fiscal year, which ends August 31st. To date, almost $4.4 billion has been collected, 90% above the same time frame a year ago, with 3 months to go. Natural gas revenues have already blown past the forecast. The forecast was for $2.67 billion in natural gas, and we've received $3 billion. In fiscal year 2021, which ended August 31st, 2021, oil production tax revenues totaled $3.45 billion, the second highest revenue on record. The previous high was $2.68 billion in fiscal year 2008. Lyons pointed out that sales taxes comprise the biggest chunk of tax revenue, and at $30.6 billion are already 20% higher than a year ago. He said Comptroller Heger will issue a revised estimate later this summer that will detail how the additional tax revenues, which go into the general revenue fund, will be spent. Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas, said the April and May production tax revenues are remarkable in that they exceed some entire year's revenues. Tax revenue generated by robust oil and natural gas activity across Texas continues to be a game changer for Texans, providing billions of dollars in funding for our state's public schools and universities, roads, first responders, and essential services. The indispensable role this industry plays in Texas underscores the importance of policies that encourage responsible development of our natural resources. Production taxes are only one of the many taxes that Texas oil and gas industry pays. There are further taxes, including the state's franchise tax and gross receipts taxes imposed on natural gas utilities and pipelines, and millions of dollars in fees imposed by state government. Seliger, special session to convey immediacy of terrible tragedy. By Stuart Doreen. State Senator Kel Seliger was on CNN's evening program with Don Lemon this week, answering questions about his call for a special session of the Texas legislature to address mass shootings, including the one in Uvalde. Seliger talked about not waiting until January 2023, the scheduled beginning of the next legislature session, for lawyers to meet. I don't think it conveys the sort of immediacy we must feel in a case like this, where this terrible tragedy is taking place now in Tulsa, and it's going to happen again, said Seliger, a Republican from Amarillo, who represents a district that includes Midland and Odessa. Interestingly, Seliger's term ends at the end of the year. Midland Republican Kevin Sparks will take his place as representative of District 31 when the next session begins. Seliger told the left-leaning Lemon that he hasn't slept well for days. because I sat there in the 87th legislature and attended a couple of special sessions, and we did nothing. He added his call will be for lawmakers to sit down with FBI, Department of Public Safety, and Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and talk about what would work in Odessa, El Paso, or Santa Fe, or Uvalde, and start coming up with solutions. There's a role for the legislature to play. We make the laws. When asked by Lemon if it was a mistake for Texas lawmakers to pass permitless carry in 2021, Seliger called the law largely unnecessary and more unnecessary than mistaken. He added that there was nothing in the bill that would have kept what happened in Uvalde from happening. Seliger said the problem that you've got is that what would have maybe kept Odessa from happening or El Paso are not the same things necessarily that would keep Uvalde from happening, and that's why all things ought to be on the table. Sparks previously told the Reporter-Telegram that while many would push for an immediate legislative response, oftentimes this creates unintended consequences. We'll never have the ability to completely eliminate evil, but must work towards strengthening families and communities. Rainy season still soaking Midland, by Stuart Doreen. Thunderstorms provided more rain relief for Midland in the early morning hours Friday. While the National Weather Service recorded 0.61 inches of rain between 3 a.m. and 5 a.m. at Midland International, rain gauges across the city broke the 1-inch barrier. Many were between 1 to 4 inches and 1.54 inches, according to the mapping system. The most was 1.5 inches in central and south Midland, which was a change from earlier in the week when north Midland received most rain. Rainfall totals from around the region include 1.5 inches in Hobbs, New Mexico, 1.15 in Gaines County, Seminole, 0.64 of an inch in Reagan County, and 0.05 of an inch in Odessa. What has happened in Midland is the creation of a rainy season compared to the previous 9 months. The National Weather Service shows 1.41 inches already in June, which is double the total of the previous 9 months and the most rain since July of 2021. The impact has been another drop in the drought index. In fact, the Texas A&M Forest Service reported Friday that its drought assessment system, the Keach-Byram system, showed another 45-point drop in Midland County on its 800-point scale. That index, which helps determine forest fire potential, dropped this week from 679 to 596. There was an 83-point drop in Andrews County and a 68-point drop in Martin County. Texas A&M Forest Service also reported that Midland County is no longer in the highest range. Moving into the range of 400 to 600, according to the index, means lower litter and duff layers contribute to fire intensity and will burn actively. Wildfire intensity begins to increase significantly. Larger fuels could burn or smolder for several days. This is often seen in late summer and early fall. Midland County Fire Marshal Justin Bunch has previously told the Reporter-Telegram that the county will not enact a burn ban until our KBI is at or above 575. Man charged with woman's assault. Daniel Edward Gomez, 27, was arrested Wednesday on a warrant for allegedly sexually assaulting a woman. On April 29th, Gomez sent a Snapchat message to the victim about going over to her house, to which she responded he could come over but didn't want to have sex with him. While watching TV, Gomez went into the kitchen and got the woman a Welch's Gummies snack. The woman stated the gummies tasted like the melatonin gummies she takes to help her sleep. She then began getting sleepy and stated Gomez began touching her before falling asleep. When she woke up, she was on her bed and Gomez was having sex with her. The woman stated she clearly did not give Gomez consent. Gomez has been released on $75,000 bond for the second-degree felony charge. Man arrested for biting and spitting at MPD officers. A man was arrested Wednesday after spitting and biting police department officials. Ahmad Jacobs, 27, was being held in Midland County Jail on two charges of assault of a peace officer, harassment of a public servant, felony degree charges, evading arrest, detention, and two other misdemeanor charges. An MPD officer observed Jacobs around 5:30 Wednesday crossing the street with a beer bottle in his left hand. The officer had reason to believe Jacobs had violated a city ordinance that states it's unlawful for any person to consume an alcoholic beverage in or upon any public highway, road, alley, or sidewalk within the city. The officer attempted to question him, but Jacobs continued to walk away from the officer. Jacobs was placed under arrest for evading detention before he became combative and attempted to take the officer to the ground. While officers attempted to place him in the patrol car, he attempted to headbutt one of the officers. He then spit and bit two different officers. He also bit the officer who was helping transport him to Midland County Jail. He's being held at Midland County on a total bond of $41,000. Oil prices near $119 on supply concerns. Pamela McEwen. An oil market focused on growing supply concerns sent oil prices higher for a sixth consecutive week. West Texas Intermediate rose 3 of 4 trading days in a week shortened by a Memorial holiday. After starting off the week with a modest 40-cent loss, WTI added 59 cents Wednesday and $1.61 on Thursday. WTI ended the week rising $2 Friday to close at $118.87. Prices were up from $114.67 at Tuesday's close and from $115.07 on Friday. Natural gas prices had a more volatile week, rising 2 of 4 trading days. Henry Hub futures on the New York NEX started the trading week off by sinking 58 cents and then regaining 55 of that on Wednesday and then falling 21 cents Thursday. So far this year, oil prices have risen 58% and natural gas futures more than doubled. The invasion is still a major factor and will continue to be, but there are other concerns as well, economist Ray Perryman said. OPEC and the basin are stepping up production, but global demand is likely to be very high in the coming months, and the new restrictions will likely take more Russian oil off the market as opposed to just shifting it around. In his daily newsletter, Edward Moya wrote, crude prices are consolidating after an OPEC plus hangover and a robust non-farm payroll report that suggests the consumer is still in decent shape. He predicted oil prices will be very choppy trade given bullish exhaustion could be settling in following the modest output boost by OPEC plus that will still keep the market tight. Also keeping the market tight are an expected strong summer driving travel season, growing the optimism for the demand outlook with China's reopening, and as some traders are expecting that President Biden's trip this month to Saudi Arabia will lead to some relief for oil prices. Bloomberg noted that the production increase of 648,000 barrels per day announced Thursday by the OPEC and allied nations only amounts to four-tenths percent of global demand over July and August. Mandy Capps passed away on May 30th. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, June 6th at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home. The family will receive visitors from 5 to 7 on Sunday, June 5th at the funeral home. Services are under the direction of Ellis Funeral Home. Russell Hugh Adkins passed away unexpectedly on December 14, 2021. A celebration of life will be held June 11th at the TL Ranch in Novice, Texas. Contact Janice Adkins at iCloud.com with questions. Leo Carlton Carr passed away on April 26th. Interment of ashes with military honors will be in the family plot at Oak Bluff Memorial Park Cemetery, Port Neches, at a later date. The family requests for remembrances to be made to the Petroleum Museum or the American Cancer Society. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Thomas Diaz Gonzalez passed away on May 31st. A memorial service will be held at 3 p.m. Saturday, June 4th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Arrangements are under the direction of Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home.
This is Jane reading for the Saturday, June 4th, Odessa American. Volunteer Fire Department held fundraiser. West Odessa Volunteer Fire Department Chief Richard Pease is a bit concerned. Two of the department's brush trucks are out of commission and brush fire season is underway. There is hope, however. Pat's Place hosted a fundraiser yesterday. All of the money raised will go straight back to the department for new equipment, fuel, and truck repairs, Pease said. The department has been operating without its 1-ton brush truck and 5-ton six-wheel heavy brush truck for quite a while, Pease said. The 1-ton's automatic transmission and transfer case blew up, and fixing it will cost about $12,000. The other brush truck's entire wiring harness shorted out on July 4, 2020, when the department responded to 75 calls on that day alone. The department has three other brush trucks and two fire engines in service, but they really need the two inoperable trucks fixed. So far, we've been blessed because we haven't had anything like they're having further east. But if we don't get a substantial amount of rain, I expect to have an even higher call volume than we did 2 years ago. People will begin selling fireworks within the next couple of weeks in anticipation of July 4th. But dry lightning strikes are also a worry, as are people who continue to burn trash unsafely. A lot of people aren't aware there's a burn ban in place right now, or just don't care. People are only allowed to burn in barrels with grates and under optimal conditions right now. Burning in 45-mile-per-hour winds is not advised. The 25-member department never knows what the day will bring. Some days they respond to 6 or 7 fire or rescue calls, and other days they don't get any at all. In addition to fixing the two out-of-commission brush trucks, Pease said the department would like to finish building another brush truck. The bed and truck were purchased prior to his time as chief and is being put together. It also needs a pump, he said. While fixing their brush trucks will be a priority, Pease said he'd also like to replace the department's old and outdated thermal imaging camera, which only works occasionally. In addition, he'd like to purchase additional personal protection equipment, which runs about $3,500 per firefighter. The department currently has no PPE to distribute to new volunteers. Pease said he wanted to assure citizens that the department has implemented strict rules regarding finances and has hired a third-party accountant to reconcile its books and handle taxes. Department employees don't conduct cash transactions and are strict about collecting and keeping receipts. All checks require 2 signatures, and the department's books are available at any time to the Ector County commissioners and judge, he said. This is Jane reading for the Odessa American for Saturday, June 4th. Grateful for the opportunity. Spelling Bee finalist will cherish experience. Shige Sivakumar achieved his goal of making the finals of the Scripps National Spelling Bee and got some perks along the way. He and his parents and sister got to take a White House tour, attend an awards banquet, and farewell party. Sivakumar tied for 9th place in the Bee, getting out on the word conoracious. He said it is a genus of plant. Sivakumar was one of 12 finalists. I've already gotten 2 medals, but I think the cash prize is about $2,000, he said on Friday. The 14-year-old attended Bowie Middle School and will head to Odessa High School in the fall. He added that he thought getting the experience was really surreal because he has dreamed about it since he started spelling. This is the 3rd year he has qualified for the National Bee and the last year he could participate. I'm just grateful for the opportunity to finally get that chance. I knew most of the words in the round I got out. I think I just got the hardest word in the round. Lucky plays a part in the Bee, Sivakumar said. I definitely was expecting an easier word than I actually got. Contestants were asked vocabulary questions too, but with his preparation, he was ready. I'm really happy with how I did. My minimum goal was to make the finals, and I'm glad I did that. But what I really wanted to do is just do my best and give it my all. I'm glad I didn't get out on a word that I'd seen many times and flubbed it or something. It was a tough word, and I'm glad that it was a tough word, and I didn't get out so easily, Siva Kumar said. This is Jane reading from the Saturday Odessa American, June 4th. Basin rivals Saudi Arabia, Russia, in oil production. Record growth projected through next year. The Permian Basin is now pumping more oil than every country in the world except Saudi Arabia and Russia, and considering the multiple factors at play, its global status will keep rising. That's according to Rystad Energy, an independent research and business intelligence company based in Oslo, Norway, which says the basin will boom from the record 5.2 million barrels per day that it produced in May to 5.6 million by the end of this year and 6.5 million BPD in 2023, or almost half a record total U.S. production of 13.2 million BPD. The Permian has become the hotspot for the U.S. oil production thanks to significant resources, low breakdown even costs, and high oil content, said Espen Erlingsen, Rystad's director of upstream research. This trend is only likely to continue as global markets struggle and with supply constraints, and the demand for oil shows little sign of easing. Asked if 6.5 million BPD is realistic, Henry Resources President David Bledsoe of Midland said, I think we can get there, but it depends a lot on how the major oil companies view their capital budgets and their interactions with Wall Street. The private companies will continue to drill, with the basin's rig count standing at 343, up from 225 a year ago, and nearly half of the national count of 727, Bledsoe said. It will be the best thing for the industry if we add a lot of production rates like we have in the past, drive the prices down, and don't continue the wild ride of price volatility, which is hard on all of us. The reason we have seen an uptick in production in the last few months is that we're deciding to do that a year ago. It takes about a year from the decision to add production for that production to come online. Society of Professional Engineers spokesman Stephen Rasenfoss of Houston said the basin's output is primarily a result of its technology. You're achieving a huge amount of oil, which is indicative of the fact that you've gotten really good at technology and you keep getting better, Rasenfoss said on Thursday. The Permian Basin has a great concentration of talented people who are very good at applying the new technology in new ways. Rasenfoss said 6.5 million BPD doesn't seem much out of line if the needed equipment and fracking sand are found. The Eagle Ford Shale place in South Texas and the Bakken Formation in North Dakota had been shrinking, but now they're growing, he said. Get $100 oil and people get interested. Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association President Ed Longenecker said the basin's growth is not overly surprising because the oil and gas producers have responded to the higher commodity prices and the call to increase domestic production and address the supply shortage and growing demand. The Permian is one of the most prolific information in the world, so it's good to see how it stacks up to the producing nations around the world, Longenecker said Thursday from Austin. You have the resources and infrastructure with the community and region that is accustomed to supporting the oil and gas industry. Longenecker said reaching 6.5 million BPD will obviously depend on another of market factors. If the commodity prices remain high and nothing overly burdensome is enacted at the federal level, we should reach new records in Texas this year or next year, driven largely by the Permian. Growth in production could be affected by challenges in the workforce, shortage of materials, and an adversarial federal policy environment. This is Jane reading for the Odessa American for Saturday, June 4th. 2022 Parks Legato Farmers Market begins June 11th. The 2022 season of the Parks Legato Farmers Market begins June 11th and will run every second Saturday of the month until October. The market will take place from 8 a.m. to noon. The market will have vendors with fresh produce, eggs, bread, meats, jams and jellies, honey, baked goods, and more. The event will also have live music, food trucks, activities for the kids, and backyard games. Our vision for Parks Legato was that it would serve as a gathering place for West Texas, see to thousands of West Texans come out for each market, and support these local farmers and small businesses has been amazing. Colin Sewell, founder of the Parks Legato Town Center, stated in a press release, "It takes a lot of hard work from over 100 families to make this short four-hour event happen each month." One West Texas farmer who has been part of the Parks Legato Farmers Market from the beginning shared his story about how his family has grown while being part of the Parks Legato Farmers Market. "Our first year of operation was 2005. What started as a small garden to keep me and my brothers busy in the summer has turned into a larger scale produce and meats business. We are ever expanding and branching into different markets. In addition, we are in the process of building a meats processing facility to harvest our own livestock. In addition, we can also take custom orders for an individual interested in having their own livestock processed in the future," Trevor Schwartz from Schwartz Boys Produce stated in the press release. This is Jane reading for the Odessa American for Saturday, June 4th, from the obituary and death notice section. Virginia Ann Lamberton was a caring wife, mother, grandmother, sister, and friend. She left this world peacefully on April 13th and will be greatly missed. Jenny was born in Vernon, Texas, to Walter and Florine Underwood Gardner on December 8, 1941. She is survived by her grandchildren, Stephen Lamberton, Nicole Rainey, Sean Miftari, Michael David Lamberton, and Chelsea Lamberton, and several great-grandchildren. Funeral service will take place on Saturday, June 11th at 10 a.m. at Sunset Funeral Home in Odessa. Burial service at Sunset Memorial Cemetery will immediately follow. Flowers may be sent to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To leave condolences for the family, please visit www.ebensberger-fisher.com. Arrangements with Ebensberger Fisher Home of Burney. In Tyler, Texas, Becky Sam Dixon, former longtime Odessan, age 79, passed from this life on June 1st. In Tyler, Texas. She was born September 30, 1942, in Stamford to Sam Tom Moberly and Charles Alberta Fryer Moberly of Odessa. Those left to cherish her love and memories include her husband of 35 years, William Clarence Dixon, her sister Judy DeWeese, niece Debbie Elmer, nephew Steve DeWeese and Brad DeWeese, and several stepchildren. A celebration of life will be held for Becky Sam at 11 a.m. on Saturday, June 11th at Hilliard Funeral Home, 386 North Maple Avenue in Van, Texas, with Reverend Kenneth Meadows officiating. In Odessa, Yesenia Inez Perez, 18, passed from this life on May 28th. She was born to Robert Christopher Perez and Veronica Valerio on January 2, 2004. Those left to cherish her memories are her mother, Veronica Valero, her father, Robert Christopher Perez, siblings Nicole, Isabel, Gloria, Gabriela, Faith, Ezekiel, and Daria. A visitation will be held on Monday, June 6th from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. and Tuesday, June 7th from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the 24-hour Chapel at Acres West Funeral Chapel in Odessa. A funeral will be held Wednesday, June 8th at 1 p.m. at the 24-hour chapel at Acres West Funeral Home in Odessa. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel in Odessa. Condolences to the family may be made online at acreswestfuneral.com. In Odessa, Pamela Jane Price, 77, died on May 22nd. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Secondary Teacher of the Year, Inspired by Students, by Ruth Campbell. Melissa Valenzuela, Hector County ISD Secondary Teacher of the Year, has been inspired by the special education population. She serves at Wilson and Young Middle School. But in the fall, she's been promoted to a supervisor position in special education downtown. Venezuela was recently named the Secondary Teacher of the Year. It's a complete honor and reward in itself, honestly. I'm extremely grateful and thankful for all the students and teachers who have helped me grow as an educator. It was a team effort. I couldn't have done it without the Wilson and Young family, Venezuela said. She is in her seventh year with ECISD. This is her third year as special education department head. Villanzuela went to Odessa College and University of Permian Basin. She earned her bachelor's degree in psychology with a minor in special populations and a master in psychology from licensed professional counseling, both from UTPB. I didn't always want to be a teacher. I actually wanted to be a child psychiatrist, and I started working in MHMR when I graduated, and that's whenever I was intrigued and I wanted to pursue a career with individuals with special needs, Venezuela said. She has enjoyed working at Wilson and Young. I think it's just the way we all work together, how we collaborate. We're a team, and we all have the same goals and ambitions for our students, Venezuela said. She said she enjoys working with all the different students and finding out about their dreams and goals. They're just so driven. They're never given up, Venezuela said. In her new role, she'll be teaching students and guiding and supporting adults. Venezuela will not only be over her campus, but a number of assigned schools as well. It will be an adjustment, but I'm also excited for the new journey that I'll be setting forth on, Venezuela said. I feel like what I've brought to one campus, I'm hoping I can deliver that energy to other campuses. I already have high goals set for myself and for the new journey as well, she added. Venezuela is engaged and has a 4-year-old daughter who attends Lamar Early Education Center. She also has expecting at the end of January. Born in Mexico, her parents brought Venezuela here at a very young age to better her life and the life opportunities. They only attend school up to the fifth grade since higher education wasn't affordable. My parents helped us out with homework, but they struggled. My dad was determined and became a welder as my siblings and I got older, Venezuela said in an email. They always encouraged our success and always wanted what was best for us. A reason I can choose education was to help others with similar backgrounds, she added. She is the oldest of three children. She has a younger sister and brother. Her sister is a substitute for ECISD, and her husband owns a flooring company. They have 4 children who attend ECISD. Her brother is a welder and has his own trucking company. His wife is a stay-at-home mom. They have 4 children who attend Kermit ISD, Venezuela said. When Venezuela found out about the award, she was shocked. Principal Anthony Garcia had called them into a conference room to prepare questions for an interview. Garcia called them out, and that's when she saw the group standing there with cameras, people recording, and Superintendent Scott Murray holding a place card with her name on it. It was shocking, and it was a very nice experience, Venezuela said. Teaching is a profession where you can build and mold the minds of children, she said. I want to make a difference in our future. I want to be able to plant seeds in children where they create a positive impact in their lives and society. Being a teacher is enriching for the students as well as us as teachers, Venezuela said. She added that she wanted to thank her family for always being there and supporting her. Garcia said Venezuela is hardworking and dedicated. As a campus lead, she goes above and beyond, focusing on what's best for students in the campus, Garcia added in a text message. Miss Venezuela has been an important part of our campus growth and success and will be missed. I wish her luck on her new role downtown, he said. Good morning, friends. This is Julie reading from The Odessa American on June 5th. 23 legislative session has PBPA on guard. Leaders say more Green New Deal legislation sure to be filed, by Bob Campbell. Planning for the January through May 2023 state legislative session isn't easy in those topsy-turvy times of booming oil and natural gas prices, rampaging inflation, and the anti-oil and gas rhetoric out of Washington. But the Permian Basin Petroleum Association is taking an early gander and trying to anticipate what it will need to do, says PBPA President Ben Shepherd. Shepherd said Tuesday that one certainty is a continuing assault by Texas House of Representatives Democrats in Austin, who filed a number of Green New Deal-related bills last year's session, but were thwarted in the Republican-led House Energy Resources Environmental Regulations Committee. As we get closer to the session, we'll get a clearer picture of the things we would like to see and things we have to defend the industry against, Shepherd said. We're having preliminary conversations and trying to get ready. Referring to Odessa Republican Representative Brooke Landgraf, Midland Representative Tom Craddock, and Senate-elect Kevin Sparks of Midland, he said, "It's really helpful to have Brooks as chairman of environmental regulations. Tom will continue his role as an expert on energy resources, and we're extremely happy to have Kevin in the Senate, where they need more expertise." While the Texas Senate has had no one who knew much about oil and gas, Shepherd said, it should also help to have Republican Reps Tan Parker of Flower Mound and Phil King of Weatherford, whose districts incurred the Barnett Shale region south of Fort Worth after their successful bid to move up to 31-member Senate. He noted the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality will come up for its 10-year sunset review next year, that the PBPA has been pleased with the TCEQ's recent proactive monitoring and flyovers in the basin. "I think they're doing a good job," Shepherd said. "They're an effective agency. Ask what other challenges the industry faces." He listed the shortage of labor and blooming cost of supplies and equipment like sand, tubing valves, and goods of all sizes. "A lot of folks were forced to get rid of some equipment in the service sector right now. What they can find is more extensive than it was a year ago," Shepherd said. "Sometimes we're hearing from all PBPA members that its hiring is difficult. They're struggling to fill all openings from roughnecks to pump operators to truck drivers, but folks who get out of there and make the industry work." Another goal, he said, may be helpful to address the challenges presented by the statewide power grid and avoid blackouts like those that occurred during winter storms, Uri, in February of 2021. "We'd like to see some additional build-out of electrical generation plants powered by natural gas and other sources in the basin," Shepherd said. Adding that would lower the bills to customers, stemming from transmission congestion where there's too much demand on the lines. Officials at airport seized cocaine stashed in wheelchair. The Associated Press. Charlotte, North Carolina. Federal authorities say a man has been arrested in Charlotte, North Carolina, after he stopped in the city's airport with more than 23 pounds of cocaine concealed in the seat cushions of a motorized wheelchair. U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers encountered the traveler as he was arriving at Charlotte Douglas International Airport from the Dominican Republic this week, according to the Friday news release. His answers didn't match up. His physical purported handicap did not match up. That was a telltale sign that there was something suspicious. Mike Prada, a Homeland Security Investigation Deputy Special Agent, told WSOC-TV. State News Roundup. Police: cop kills 13-year-old who crashed into patrol car. San Antonio. Police in San Antonio fatally shot a 13-year-old who was driving a suspected stolen car early Friday and rammed it into a marked patrol car, officials said. In a statement, police said officials were answering a report of multiple gunshots fired about 1:30 a.m. when they found and tried to stop a vehicle that had been reported stolen. Instead of stopping, the suspect vehicle accelerated towards an officer's patrol car and slammed into it. According to the statement, another officer shot the young driver, who died at the hospital. Two other juveniles who were in the vehicle were not injured, police said. No identities have been released. Five teens wounded in shooting at West Texas house party. El Paso. Five teens were hospitalized Saturday, two in critical condition after gunfire broke out at an overnight high school graduation party in West Texas, authorities said. The teens, ranging from age 16 to 18, were wounded about 1 a.m. Saturday at a home in Socorro, a town on the Mexican border near El Paso, said Socorro Police Chief David Burton. As many as 100 people were there. Partygoers said the shooting erupted after a fight broke out between two groups, Burton said. Burton expressed confidence at the Saturday news conference that had suspect and identified and arrested. At least one killed in flash flooding, Dallas. At least one person was killed as heavy rains caused flash flooding in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. The storm sloshed across the region Friday night, resulting in widely scattered flash flooding. Fire and rescue officials say a man called his family to say his car was filling with water at a flooded crossing over southeast Arlington Creek. The car was then swept from the bridge. Crews arrived and pulled the man from the car, but he later died at the hospital. The Tarrant County Medical Examiner's Office identified the man as a 22-year-old Saniel Antonio Singh. Teachers after Texas attack. None of us are built for this. The Associated Press, Virginia. Teacher Jessica Salfia was putting up graduation balloons last month at her West Virginia high school when two of them popped, setting off panic in a crowded hallway between classes. One student dropped to the floor. Two others lunged into open classrooms. Salfia quickly shouted, "It's balloons, balloons," and apologized as the teachers realized the noise didn't come from gunshots. The moment of terror at Spring Mills High School in Martinburg, about 80 miles northwest of Washington, happened May 23rd, the day before a gunshot fatally shot 19 children and two teachers in a classroom in Uvalde. The reaction reflects the fears that pervades the nation's schools and taxes its teachers, even those who have never experienced such violence, and it comes on top of strains imposed by the coronavirus pandemic. Safia has more direct connection to gun threats than most. Her mother, also a West Virginia teacher, found herself staring down at a student with a gun in her classroom 7 years ago. After talking to him for some 2 hours, she was hailed for her role in helping bring the incident to a peaceful end. For any teacher standing in front of a classroom in 21st century America, the job seems to ask the impossible. Already expected to be guidance counselors, social workers, surrogate parents, and more to their student, teachers are sometimes called on to be protectors, too. The U.S. public school landscape has changed markedly since the Columbine school shooting in Colorado in 1999, said Safia. Said teachers think about the risk every day. What would happen if we went into a lockdown? What would happen if I hear gunshots, she said. What would happen if one of my students came to the school armed that day? This is a constant thread of thought. George Thetherius was a teacher and principal for decades and has spent some 18 years training teachers and school administrators at Syracuse University. He says teachers are stretched more now than ever, even more than last year when the pandemic was newer. We're sort of left in the moment where we do expect teachers and schools to solve all our problems and do it quickly, he said. Schools nationwide have been dealing with widespread episodes of misbehavior since the return to in-person learning, which has been accompanied by soaring student mental health needs. In growing numbers, teens have been turning to gun violence to resolve spur-of-the-moment conflicts, researchers say. In Nashville, Tennessee, three Englewood Elementary School staffers sprang into action last month to restrain a man who had hopped a fence. After children on the playground were directed inside, the man followed them, but he was tackled by kindergarten teacher Rachel Davis. At one point, Secretary Katrina Nikki Thomas held him in a headlock. They and school bookkeeper Shay Patton cornered the man, who didn't have a gun, inside the school until authorities arrived. All three employees were hurt. For me, it was just like, these kids are innocent, Patton said. I just knew that they couldn't protect themselves, so it was up to us to do it, and I didn't think twice. The three employees watched in horror less than 2 weeks later as the news of the new Uvalde shooting unfolded. In my head, immediately I thought, that could have been me and my kids, Davis said. That could have been us there, on that playground with this guy if he had had a gun with him. According to frustration for some educators, was the scope gaping of a teacher initially blamed for propping open the door of a gunman used to enter the Uvalde teacher school. Days later, officials said the teacher had closed the door but it didn't lock. Kindergarten teacher Anna Hernandez said Texas educators are anxious about a rough patch that has lasted years and shows no sign of ending. She and a group of colleagues from Dilley drove an hour to Uvalde to do all they could, delivering donated stuffed animals and cases of water. She says more is needed. Changes have to be done for us, all of us, to feel secure in the classroom as teachers, and for students also to feel secure and safe in the classroom, she said. Abbott Nutrition restarts baby formula plant, the Associated Press, Washington. Abbott Nutrition has restarted production at the Michigan plant formula factory that had been closed for months due to contamination. The company said Saturday, taking a step towards easing a nationwide supply shortage expected to persist into the summer. The February shutdown of the largest formula factory in the country led to the supply problem that had forced some parents to seek formulas from food banks, friends, and the doctor's offices. Abbott said it initially will prioritize production of its Elicare specialty formulas for infants with severe food allergies and digestive problems who have few other options for nutrition. The company said it will take about 3 weeks before new formula from the plant begins getting to consumers. We will ramp up production as quickly as we can while meeting all requirements, Abbott said in a statement. The plant's reopening is one of several federal actions that are expected to improve supplies in the weeks ahead. President Joe Biden's administration has eased import rules for foreign manufacturers, airlifted formula from Europe, and invoked federal emergency rules to prioritize U.S. production. Abbott closed its Sturgis, Michigan factory in February after the Food and Drug Administration began investigating 4 bacterial infections among infants who consume powdered formula from the plant. 2 of the babies died. The company continued to state that its products have not been directly linked to the infections, which involve different bacterial strains. FDA inspectors have eventually uncovered a host of violations at the plant, including bacterial contamination, a leaky roof, lack of safety protocol. The FDA has faced intensive scrutiny for taking months to close the plant and then negotiate its reopening. Agency leaders told Congress they had to enter a legally binding agreement with Abbott to assure all the problems were fixed. Abbott's February recall of several leading brands, including Similac, squeezed supplies that had already been strained by supply chain disruptions and stockpiling during the COVID-19 shutdowns. The shortage has been most dire for children with allergies, digestive problems, and metabolic disorders who rely on specialty formulas. The Abbott factory is the only source of many of those products, providing nutrition to about 5,000 U.S. babies, according to the federal officials. Abbott is one of just 4 companies that produce about 90% of U.S. formula. The company recalls and shut down trigger a cascade of effects. Retailers had limited supplies, purchasing to consumer supplies, and parents had been told to switch brands to whatever formula is in stock. FDA Commissioner Robert Califf recently told lawmakers it could be about 2 months before formula supplies return to normal levels. The agency has waived many of its regulatory requirements to accept more formulas from United Kingdom, Australia, and other nations. U.S. manufacturers, including Reckitt and Gerber, have also stepped up production, running plants 24/7 and sourcing more formula than alternative facilities. Death Notice. Orba Dinah Height, Odessa. Orba Dinah Height, 86, of Odessa, died Friday, June 3rd, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m., June 8th, at Northside Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Clyde Chapman is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, June 6th. Bars, restaurants rarely held accountable for overserving. The story was written by Kim Smith. Last month, an Odessa widow filed a civil lawsuit against 3 bars, alleging they overserved her husband in the hours before he died in an alcohol-related crash. But statistics show it is rare for the people who overserve alcohol to face criminal charges. It is also rare for bars and restaurants to be held accountable. According to Texas state statutes, it is a misdemeanor to, quote, sell an alcoholic beverage to an habitual drunkard or an intoxicated or an insane person, end quote. Ector County Clerk's statistics indicate just one person has been charged with that crime since January 1, 2019. Authorities allege the defendant in the case was observed by an undercover Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission officer serving an intoxicated person at Zucci's Sports Bar on February 1, 2020. The case remains open. Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan said such cases are often difficult to prove. Quote, you have to show beyond a reasonable doubt that whoever served them knew they were drunk and intoxicated and should not be served, and that's not the easiest thing to do, Gallivan said. Ideally, prosecutors heading into court would be armed with video surveillance clearly showing the person being served was intoxicated and the number of times they continued to be served while drunk, but that isn't often the case, Gallivan said. According to Ector County Medical Examiner statistics, there were 64 fatal DWI crashes within the county from 2019 through 2022, and while it's unclear how many of the drivers in those cases were drinking at bars and restaurants, certainly some of them were, Gallivan agreed. Gallivan said he isn't sure why more over-serving cases are not presented to his office for possible prosecution, but he is willing to pursue convictions if there is sufficient evidence. When officers encounter suspected drunk drivers, Gallivan said he suspects officers are more focused on obtaining evidence against them than bartenders and waitstaff. As for local law enforcement agencies, Sergeant Stephen Blanco, a spokesman for the Texas Department of Public Safety, Odessa Police Corporal Stephen LaSuere, and Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths, all said they enlist the help of the TABC primarily when there's a fatal crash and they suspect a bar or restaurant has overserved to an intoxicated person. Chris Porter, a spokesman for the TABC, said from January 1, 2019, to May 15, 2022, the TABC has filed administrative charges against 14 bars and restaurants in Ector and Midland counties for over-serving or serving to minors. The agency can administer a warning or fine in cases of relatively minor violations, with increased penalties such as suspension or cancellation of a license for more serious offenses, Porter said. 11 of the 14 bars or restaurants are located in Ector County. Two of the cases were dismissed and four remain open. In 5 of the 13 cases, the TABC placed the establishments in restrained status because they fell under the state's safe harbor rule, Porter said. Under that rule, if a bar or restaurant meets certain criteria, it won't be held accountable for the actions of a server. The establishment won't be held accountable if the server wasn't an owner or officer of the company, holds a current seller-server training certificate from the TABC. All of the establishment servers were certified within 30 days of their hire date. The establishment has written policies regarding responsible alcohol service, and the server's boss didn't encourage the employee to violate the law. According to TABC records, one bar in Odessa has been accused of violating state laws 3 times, the Halftime Grill and Cantina. An over-serving case from June 2019 remains open. Another over-serving case from March 2020 was restrained, and the bar owners received a $3,000 fine for serving a minor in January 2019, records show. TABC records show the Red Stag paid a $1,500 fine in 2019 for selling to a minor. Ector County court records show 7 people have been criminally charged with selling alcohol to minors from January 1, 2019 to May 15, 2022. Another two were charged with purchasing or furnishing alcohol to a minor. There are 58,000 businesses in Texas that hold liquor licenses and 200 commissioned TABC officers, Porter said. Those officers have to focus their energy on high-problem areas, he said. Quote, enforcement activities are patterned on a risk-based approach, meaning businesses or areas with high instances of previous violations are more often the subject of inspections, both open and undercover, Porter said. The agency relies on information provided by concerned citizens, as well as coordination with local law enforcement to best direct our resources where they're needed most, end quote. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said he believes that, for the most part, bars and restaurants have gotten better at self-policing themselves after several local tragedies, including the July 2019 deaths of six-year-old twins Mia and Maya Coy. Angelica Garcia is accused of killing the girls in a drunk driving accident after spending time at Toby's Lounge at the MCM Grande Hotel and Fun Dome. Jury selection is scheduled to begin today for her trial on two counts of intoxication manslaughter. The twins' parents, Raul and Aguida Coy, settled their civil lawsuit against the lounge in December. The couple accused the lounge of continuing to provide alcoholic beverages to Garcia while she was obviously and dangerously intoxicated. The terms of the settlement were sealed as part of the deal, but court records indicate the defendants did not admit liability. Griffiths said he wishes there were more TABC agents working in the area. Quote, about 25 years ago, we had half a dozen agents in this area, and I could name almost all of them, Griffiths said. They would routinely go into bars and do inspections. Nowadays, their investigations are pretty much after the fact, end quote. Griffiths also said he wants local establishments to know that if they ever have any issues from a patron they no longer want to serve, they can call law enforcement officers for help. Just as in the Coy case, bars and restaurants can theoretically be held accountable for over-serving people through the filings of civil lawsuits, but there are difficulties there as well. They are called dram shop lawsuits. They are cases in which drinking establishments are sued when a drunken driver kills or maims someone. Historically, a dram was a small drink of liquor. Odessa attorney Robert White, who has been practicing law 39 years, said the safe harbor rule, which was implemented about 17 years ago, has limited the number of dram shop cases that are filed. Most bars and restaurants make sure they fall under the exemptions contained within the rule. It's a rare establishment that tries to cut corners, he said. Unless an establishment has cut corners, and unless an attorney can prove the employers encourage their staff to serve someone who is intoxicated or underage, attorneys tend to stay away from such cases, White said. Getting evidence can be tough, but, quote, sometimes we can get videotapes and it's obvious what's going on, and sometimes we can get cash register receipts, White said. Other cases are rejected because the bars or restaurants aren't insured, so there's no money to compensate the victims, White said. When lawsuits are filed, the law requires the parties to go through mediation, White said. Most cases are settled at that point because each side knows what evidence the other side has. In addition, attorneys often don't want to go to trial because jurors always have the option to assign a percentage of the blame to the drunk driver in the case, White said. If a jury decides the driver was more to blame than the establishment, the amount of the award could decrease significantly. Gallivan said he finds the whole topic incredibly frustrating. He finds it troubling that 13 of the TABC's 16 cases filed over the last 3 years were in Ector County. Quote, I think it's just part of, unfortunately, in my opinion, the culture here to drink. I'm not against drinking, but I think alcohol-related offenses, specifically DWI, and those offenses that occur from that, intoxication assault, intoxication manslaughter, are the most preventable offenses, Calavan said. All you have to do is have a plan not to drive. Go drink all you want. Have somebody give you a ride. Call an Uber. Do something. End quote.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.